Welcome, Dumbheads, to this week's Megasode of MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. Monday through Saturday, I drop one episode per day, identifying the dumbest thing on every single goddamn page of Heroes Unlimited, the gloriously ramshackle superhero RPG from Palladium Books. On Sundays, I combine all the week's previous episodes in one Megasode, like this one. If you'd like to play along at home, we're reading Heroes Unlimited Revised 2nd Edition, 2nd Printing, from December 1998. Today we're discussing page 234 of Heroes Unlimited. We are still in the Minor Superpower section. We're in the section on Heightened Senses today. And of course, Hell Knight continues as I continue in one sitting to re-record episodes lost in the Great Computer Crash. It is late. I am on my third or fourth cup of coffee. Despair is giving way to giddy anxiety. Let's talk about some fucking superpowers. All five senses are represented on this page, albeit Heightened Sense of Sight redirects to Supervision, which is listed later, for reasons known only to the author. Of the five senses, which do you suppose is the dumbest as a supposed asset in crime fighting? If you guess taste, you are correct, but it's probably even worse than you thought. So, the basics of heightened sense of taste really couldn't be otherwise. You're just really good at tasting stuff. The game takes two paragraphs explaining this, but there's just not that much to say. You can taste food, you can taste wine, you can taste drugs, you can taste chemicals. Anything you can put on your tongue, you can fucking taste it. And you taste it so good that you can recognize what it is. For example, if you taste wine, you can tell what kind of wine it is. If you taste a drug, you can tell what kind of drug it is, based on your pharmaceutical skill or past experience, it says here. I do like the note about skill in pharmaceuticals, a field in which, as everyone knows, they strongly encourage you to sample all the drugs, just to get a flavor. You know, it's like being a waiter at a fancy restaurant. You want to familiarize yourself with the menu, so that when someone comes in, you know, with a request for you, like, tonight, you know, I'm going to be dining on a nice duck à l'orange, and I can't cope with existence. Then you can say, duck, you say. Can't cope with life. Might I recommend a Vicodin? This is the kind of service you can get from a truly excellent pharmacist. But if that sounds remotely impressive to you, restrain your enthusiasm, because once this power is quantified, whatever cool factor it might have had is ripped away. Quote, recognize common ingredients such as sugar, salt, pepper, spices, foods, gasoline, and similar at a proficiency of 70% plus 4% per level of experience. So first of all, obviously, we have to address the fact that according to the author of Heroes Unlimited, common ingredients include spice, food, and gasoline. The classic food pyramid. But putting aside for a moment the author's personal revelation that he drinks gasoline, consider the number there. 70% plus 4% per level of experience. So let's say that you are a first level superhero just getting into the superhero game. You've just got this special gift. You've got a keen sense of taste. When you taste a wine, you can tell what its vintage might be. And naturally, the first thought that comes in your mind is, you know, I got to use this power for humanity. Let me get a costume. Let me get a big tongue-shaped car. I am now Dr. Tongue, with apologies to Zombies Ate My Neighbors. So this is your destiny. You go out there to make a name for yourself as a crime fighter, and you're successful. Your media blitz works. Your social media presence is strong, and you get invited on a morning show, and they have like a whole lineup of like blind tastings for you to do, of exotic foods and ingredients, to test out your superpower. The superpower that you are going to use to fight crime, improve society, and maybe one day save the world. And so they start you off with a warm-up. Here, taste a little of this, a pinch of this, and tell me what it is. And you taste the white powder. Dr. Tongue furrows his brow in front of the nation on live television. I'm sorry, Katie, I can't place it. It's salt. You moron, it's salt. You only have a 74% chance to recognize salt with your heightened sense of taste. Good luck saving the world. Not only is this a bad superpower, it's not even a good trick. Gasoline? Who can't recognize gasoline? Little bit of trivia about me. I have virtually no sense of smell. One of the only things I can smell is gasoline. And yet here's Dr. Tongue, master of 1,000 tastes. You serve him a glass of gasoline with dinner. He would need like multiple sips to put his finger on what's going on. Just a disgrace. Son of Dr. Tongue will not be proud. Now, what you may notice is that none of this is remotely useful, so the quantity maybe is not that important. Like 74%, 84%, who really cares? Because the fate of the world is unlikely to rest on the taste of salt at any point in your campaign. But kindly, Heroes Unlimited does offer you a practical way to use this power. Quote, recognize exotic tastes, such as chemicals, toxins, and poisons, at a proficiency of 30% plus 5% per level of experience. Practicing to recognize an unusual taste for 2 months will put that taste into the common item category. So you're pretty good, 70% good, at recognizing things you taste all the time, like food and gasoline. But when it comes to poisons, right, if someone should try to poison Dr. Tongue, because that sure seems like the most effective way to kill someone whose literal only talent is the ability to taste things, then you have a 30% chance, about a third of the time, you can pick out, there's something off about this drink. And maybe that 35% or whatever isn't enough for you. You can improve it. All you have to do is consistently and deliberately consume, at least put in your mouth, the same poison over a course of 2 months. Then, in future, if someone should try to poison you with that poison, if they should think, you know what I'll do? I'll kill Dr. Tongue, the superhero whose only thing is that he can taste stuff. I'll kill him by trying to slip him some arsenic, because I saw him on that morning show, and I don't think he's all that. Then, since you've been like a smart guy, tap forehead, you've been regularly, like every night before bed, you've been sipping on some arsenic, there is, get this, a 70% chance that you'll know that you're being killed by arsenic before you die of arsenic poisoning. Truly, you are a mighty hero, Dr. Tongue. This was a good choice. You should have listened to your mother. You should have been a pharmacist. You also get a 10% bonus to the cooking skill, which still does not make you as good at cooking as a robot with no sense of taste. So fuck you, Dr. Tongue. Today we're discussing page 235 of Heroes Unlimited. We are still in the minor powers section, talking about minor little super abilities, like having the ability to most of the time tell when someone is trying to feed you gasoline, as we discussed yesterday. Today, we're discussing two more of these minor super abilities, one of them because it is the dumbest thing on this page, and one of them because Borgen has this ability. Let's start with the latter, get it out of the way, because it's not going to be too important to Borgen. She has the power of mental stun. This is not really related to what has been a pretty good, like, biological transformation theme to her powers so far, right? She can alter her physical body, give herself different looking teeth, different colored fur, and she can turn her limbs into various medieval weapons. Now, here comes this kind of pseudo-psychic power. It's at pains to say that it's non-psionic, and if you wonder what I mean, the name of the power in big bold letters is Mental Stun, and then in parentheses, non-psionic. This is a necessary note because this is a power you do with your mind, and it affects other people's minds, and to save against it, you make a save versus psionics, but on a, you know, abstract, on an ontological level, this is not psionics as such. It really should be. Now that superheroes with super abilities can have psionics, this should have just been turned into a psionic power, and then it would have been off this list where I wouldn't have to worry about working it into Borgen's deal. But here it is, and here we are. This doesn't really have anything to do with anything with Borgen, but I'm making lemons out of lemonade here, so I found something to like about this power. When Borgen uses it, she gets swirly eyes, like a cartoon hypnotist. That's cute, it works with her big thick glasses, and it makes optimal use of her natural bug-eyed puggishness. I think a pug with swirly eyes will be cute. So that's all I got for Mental Stun. How it's going to fit into her whole thing, I don't really know. It might just be like one of those random powers people have, like Dr. Doom. How Dr. Doom can mentally possess people because aliens taught him how one time has nothing to do with anything else about Dr. Doom. It's comic books. Leaving aside Mental Stun, let's go to the dumbest thing on this page. And this one, as you may know, it's Hell Knight. I am re-recording a bunch of episodes of MDC that I recorded before and I lost in a computer crash. I'm drinking a ton of coffee. I'm getting increasingly agitated and more so by things that bugged me the first time I went through these pages, and now they bug me just that little bit more. And this is one of those. This page contains the Manipulate Kinetic Energy superpower. As you may recall from high school science classes, kinetic energy essentially is a form of pink energy that you can charge playing cards with and make them explode. There are a bunch of other uses for kinetic energy listed here, like being able to blunt the force of punches and kicks directed at you, being able to use kinetic energy to kind of parry things that are thrown at you, but the one we care about is the one where you throw things at people, and make them fly super hard and super fast. Now, with the power of kinetic energy, you can throw all kinds of stuff and do a little extra damage with it. So lots of things that one might not normally use as a weapon are suddenly a bit more viable. Therefore, this page lists many objects, including weapons, with a range and a damage. Now, if you've been listening to the podcast since the beginning of this season, since way back at the beginning of the book, you will recall that in the weapon proficiency section, in a master stroke of rules negligence, there are two separate lists of projectile weapons on the same page that disagree on damage and range for the very same weapons. But those lists were both fairly partial. Here, we find, I think, the most comprehensive list of projectile weapons in this book. Now, I will give you one fucking guess whether any of the weapons on this page match the tables from that other page way back in weapon proficiencies. Among these three tables, do you think there is any agreement? No, of course there's not. Even in the rare case of those weapons that had the same stats on both tables way back on page 61, those stats are now different. For example, the boomerang has twice the range on this page as it did back on page 61. The arrow of a longbow, 160 feet more range on this page than back on that page. This isn't to mention weapons that only appear on one of the tables back on page 61, like the dart, which back then went 30 feet and did 1 point of damage, and now goes 60 feet and does 1d4 damage. All of this is a mess. All of this is fucked up. But here's the one that disturbed me the most. And this is from the perspective of somebody who's written some games, right? There are non-weapon items on this table. One of them is the, quote, marble/snowball. Because as we know, basically the same thing. What is a snowball but a winter marble? You know, if you've got a friend over at your house when you're a kid, you wish you could throw a snowball at them, but it's July, there's no snow around, just throw a big marble at their head. Same thing. A marble/snowball can be thrown 100 feet and it does 1 point of damage, according to this page. But I fucking knew better because I read this book many, many times as a child. And when I came to this page this time for the podcast, I thought, aren't there other snowball rules in this book? And indeed, there are. Spoilers for the future, in Alter Physical Structure Ice, a major superpower, one of the subpowers is the ability to throw snowballs. Not shoot snowballs out of your hand, not create snowballs already moving at high velocity. Throw snowballs, just like this power envisions. Just like a normal, non-powered person throws a snowball. And do you know what the range is? 80 feet plus 5 feet per level of experience. Now, this may not seem like a big difference to you, but it's about a 25% difference in the two values listed here. Here's what bugs me, and this is the dumbest thing on this page. Everybody who runs or plays role-playing games has done a million adjudications or rules lookups or whatever for how much damage a knife does. And if you're the author of Heroes Unlimited, and you've run this game a lot, and clearly not paid very much attention to what you do session to session, like, I mean, this is the published work of Kevin Sambita. Imagine what his game notes look like. I can forgive him for having forgotten, repeatedly, how much damage a knife does. He's had to make this shit up on the fly hundreds of times. Who can keep it straight? But how many times in your career as a game designer do you write fucking snowball rules? I think you'd remember. I think when you were writing this list, you would remember, hey, didn't I write something about throwing snowballs before? One other time? Yeah, in that other power. That other power that's like 10 pages from here. Let me use those snowball rules. Why not? Let me just do the simplest thing in the world and copy the numbers from that page over to this page. Copying and pasting is what I love to do. It's my passion. I'm the author of Heroes Unlimited. But no. Instead, we got new contradictory snowball rules. Of how many role-playing games can it be said that there are two separate instances of rules for throwing snowballs in the game book, in the core book, and they fucking contradict? You can't even be angry. It's a miracle of incompetence. I don't know how they keep doing it. And honestly, at this point, that's where I'm at with this on a personal level. You've just heard me go through an emotional arc. I started this recording really upset about having to come and revisit this third failure to get the rules about throwing weapons right. But I've really reached acceptance. I've reached the end of that arc here by the end of the episode. I don't give a damn anymore. Well, I take it back. It's not that I don't care that these snowball rules contradict. You know me better than that. Of course I care. I care a lot. But I'm not mad and I'm not disappointed. I'm just kind of amazed. Most role-playing games don't tell you how much damage a snowball does or how far it can be thrown. this game's got two answers for you, and they don't fucking match. It's just a magical shitstorm of a world. Today we're discussing page 236 of Heroes Unlimited. We got two orders of business today, or should I say tonight. Lest you forget, it is still Hell Night. I'm still re-recording episodes that I lost in a big-ass computer crash. So I'm all about business right now, and we got two orders of business. Number one, Borgen gets a new power on this page, her final power. This is one I was worried about when I first rolled it. It is multiple limbs. Here's the thing. Borgen, I love her. You know that I love her. She's got very little going for her in terms of what this game's tables have offered her. She is unlikable. To others, I like her just fine. But according to the rules, unlikable. Not attractive, apparently, by conventional Earth standards. You can't see all these air quotes I'm doing, but whatever is the paradigm of physical attractiveness for anthropomorphic pugs, she doesn't meet it. As though that weren't bad enough, her powers, body weapons, it's all right. She could turn her limbs into melee weapons. It's kind of cool, but she's already got a badass alien trident, so not super useful. Alter physical body, again, a cool power, but how much does it help you as a dog lady trying to make it in this cold, cruel world to be able to look like some other dog lady? Mental stun doesn't even fit her image. Really, the only thing she's got going for her, the only really fun thing I like that I rolled for her on a random table, is that she's got a wardrobe full of fancy human clothes. That's awesome. She's a big, tall pug girl, and she's got all these cool clothes. It's all about the look. It's all about the silhouette with Borgen. And now, here come multiple limbs to fuck it all up. Here, I had dreams of a 6-foot-tall pug girl in a fancy evening gown, or a tuxedo, or a poodle skirt, only with a pug on it, as we've discussed on the podcast before. Or, hey, a square dancing outfit. Anything that a regular pug would look cute in, a 6-foot-tall pug girl would look cute in. And none of those looks are improved by, you know, an extra pair of arms hanging out. So I really had to think about this power, but I came up with a solution I'm pretty happy with. It says here, quote, "A character with this ability has an extra pair of limbs, either arms and hands or legs and feet." First of all, legs and feet, right out. There is no good option there. You can choose to have four humanoid legs and feet, like the four-legged man. That's gross. Or you could be a kind of centaur, it says here. And there you've got two terrible sub options. You could have your back two legs be like horse legs, and then your front two legs are like human legs, which is somehow even worse than having four human legs. Think of the running. Think of the hideous running. No, thank you. I do not want to be a half centaur, and I don't want to be a whole centaur, especially because this wouldn't even be a centaur. This would be like a pugtar. If she had all animal legs, they're all going to be like pug legs. Just, again, imagine an extended pug-like butt with little pug legs, but four of them, but blown up to human size. Already, I mean, even the conventional, like the stock pug, not nature's most elegant and efficient design. There are many wonderful body plans to fit many different ecological niches in this world, but one of those wonderful body plans is not the pug's bugle corn snack shaped body, or kind of like an old-fashioned cheerleading bullhorn on like a little stand. It's no good. Then you make it bigger. How am I supposed to ride in cars? What am I supposed to do on an elevator with my big pug butt? So legs, feet, no, that's right out. That leaves arms, and there are more options here. Your arms don't have to be arms per se. There's a loose definition of arms for this power. The text kindly offers that if I am not interested in prehensile hands, then I can have crab claws. Or I could even turn all my manipulating hands and arms into crab claws. Thanks, game. Hey, why don't I just be a crab? How about that? Why don't I just give up tools and the touch of a woman forever and ever for the privilege of having four goddamn crab claws that can't do anything? And there's no guidance for this, by the way. Your crab claws, your lion claws, your bear paws, whatever kind of hand or arm you want, you get the same bonuses, which include an improved ability to dual wield melee weapons, something for which crabs are well known, a plus 15% to climb, and a plus 5% to pick pockets, pick locks, and do palming, which, why the fuck not? I mean, as we talked about before, if you've got twice the normal size palms, somehow that makes you worse at palming. So I guess it follows, according to bizarro Heroes Unlimited logic, if you're a crab and you have no palms, then you're the best at palming and picking locks and picking pockets. Never fucking trust a crab is what I'm saying. They are the carnies of the deep. And I don't want crab claws. I mean, what I have here is a character who, let's be honest, she's an alien. She's a 6-foot-tall woman. She's a pug. She's a medical experiment. Her limbs can turn into medieval weapons. She's got a non-psionic psionic attack. She can't breathe air. She's got vision problems. She's a dapper dresser. She wields a trident. She's a trained assassin. There's a lot going on here. I don't really need to add Crab to the mix. The iconography here is already a little busy. But I do have one more option for limbs, fortunately. If I don't want full-blown arms slash pincers slash claws, I can instead have tentacles. Now we're getting somewhere. Because, as attentive listeners will know, in Heroes Unlimited, the best kind of prehensile tail you can have, and I love a prehensile tail, is a modified tentacle, because tentacles can do all the things you want from a tail in a comic book, such as sword fighting, and that's all. If you can sword fight with your tail, you got it made. I mean, it's nice if it can help you climb, but who cares? I got hands for that. I need to sword fight people who are directly behind my butt. Can't do that with hands. That's why you get a prehensile tail. And a modified tentacle can do it. So, I thought, this actually makes it all come together. Borgen is a medical experiment. What if this experiment was an attempt to regrow her limbs? What if she was like a trained military officer? We know this because she had assassin training. She was trained to go into combat, and in combat, she lost one of her arms and her tail. And then she got an experimental medical treatment to grow them back. And as a side effect of the treatment, she became, you know, super strong and gained the ability to turn her limbs into weapons. And they regrew her tail, which now counts as a tentacle, and her arm. And this is also why she can, like, alter her physical shape and stuff. Her body sort of became, like, malleable, and, like, with her will, she can reshape it. Because that's, like, a side effect of the regrowing technology. And the upshot of this is, not only can she sword fight with her tail, in the sense of holding a sword with her tail, she can actually turn her tail into a sword and fight with it. So I really pulled this one back from the brink. I'm very happy. This kind of brings everything together for Borgen. This whole medical experiment idea, the nature of the treatment she was given. Mental stun is still like the odd one out, but it's fine. She's got swirly eyes. That's cute. So that's basically a wrap on Borgen. Now that her little curly tail is a weapon, I mean, that's the cherry on top. I might give her some mundane equipment later, but for the most part, her character sheet is done. And so you might see that turn up on the Instagram sooner or later. There's one more order of business today, which is, of course, the dumbest thing on this page. I haven't forgotten what this podcast is about, although give it time. Hell Knight's just beginning. We got to talk about the dumbest thing on page 236. And, you know, I've got a few different options here, but I'm going to go with a very 90s power. A good guess somebody actually had for one of Borgen's powers. I mentioned that one of them was quite 90s. Night Stalking. Night Stalking is a new addition to Heroes Unlimited. It is very much like a tack-on power. The thing about Heroes Unlimited's second edition is that it came around at a time when fancy pants horror comics were starting to be a thing. And so, for the most part, Heroes Unlimited is a more traditional, kind of a Bronze Age feeling game in its bones. But then it's got every now and again something tacked on about, you know, the undead or demons or dark magic and, like, horror factor. The thing where many of these powers that you'll find in the super abilities section have an optional horror factor. Like, superheroes have always been able to, you know, turn into living fire, but then in the 90s, people realized suddenly, like, oh shit, that's scary. Let's get Frank Miller in here, get some overwrought captions about prostitutes, show somebody getting burned alive. Bada bing, bada boom, serious literature. So Night Stalking is a prime example of this, because it is a very on-the-nose horror superhero power. It's basically, it makes you Blade. I mean, let's be honest. What happens with Night Stalking is it gives you extra abilities to go fight the undead and other spooky things at night or in spooky environments. Seriously. It says here of Night Stalking, quote, "It can only be used at night or in a dim, eerie environment, such as a basement, cave, or abandoned building." This is like a weird dynamic because this power is very much geared toward fighting the undead, specifically vampires. Normally, when you go to fight a vampire, you want to fight them in the daytime. Right? That's normally the push and pull of vampire hunting is they want to go sleep, you know, in a coffin, in a dark cave, or in the bowels of a castle, and you want to fight them where there's a big window you can dramatically pull the curtain off of and kill them with sunlight at some point. Or, you know, out in the countryside or on the city streets where you can hold them off until sunrise and then they burst into flames. I guess the ideal place to fight a vampire would be like Disneyland for like the typical vampire hunter. You know, cheerful, broad daylight, a general sense of security. And speaking of security, excellent security. Security at Disneyland is no joke. Honestly, they don't need you. They could kill a vampire. And I would watch that horror movie. But all of this is not for the Night Stalker. The character with Night Stalking, your thing is you get extra damage and extra SDC and stuff when you fight vampires at night and or in spooky places. So you're trying to lure the vampire into the spooky place, right? Like, you're hanging out in dark alleys and shabby old kill houses and dark caves and spooky castles, trying to like lure the vampires in. And if there's a vampire who knows that you're after them, naturally, like, they don't want to get vampire hunted. So they're going to be trying to stick to cheerful places. They're going to go to Disneyland and like hang out in It's a Small World during the day, so that if you find them there, your powers aren't going to work because it's like too cloying. So this kind of reverses the typical vampire-vampire hunter dynamic. And it gives you this weird perverse incentive to go seeking out dangerous, creepy environments to fight vampires in. Again, very on the nose and very tacked on. And that leads us to probably the dumbest thing about this power, which is that this power gives you the ability not only to resist being turned into a vampire, but also to recognize vampires, despite their tricky undead deceptions. You can just tell when somebody is a vampire. When I say you, I mean you, the character. You, the player, have no fucking clue, because there aren't really vampires in this game. I mean, the closest thing we get is the mega hero with the vampiric powers, but that's like a real gray area. You know, if you are a mega hero who has the superpower of wingless flight and invulnerability, and you're super strong, but you need to drink blood to live, okay, you're a vampire. But if you're a superhero whose deal is like stretching and adhesion, but you need to suck lasers out of other superheroes, is that a vampire? You don't drink blood. You don't have any classic vampire powers. Similarly, Villains Unlimited, it's a supplement for Heroes Unlimited. That book has vampires, kind of, but they're like delusional super science vampires. It's like somebody gave a dude bat powers, and as a side effect, now he's allergic to sunlight, and he thinks of himself as a vampire, but is he objectively one? I don't know, but I guess you do. Night Stalking just gives you an intuitive sense of it. It's like pornography. You know it when you see it. Maybe it takes you a minute. You know, a dude jumps you with fangs, and you kind of take a second, squint at him. Sorry, sir. You're not a vampire. I can just tell. You should let him down easy, though. Like, good try. I mean, don't get me wrong. You're scary. You drink blood, you say? That's great for you. I'm glad you drink blood. Keep drinking blood. It would be my privilege to slay you, but it's just, that's not how it works. I only slay vampires, and I can't explain it. I can just tell you're not one. Not technically. And I think you're going to be given this speech a lot, because I don't see any evidence of anything that is a traditional vampire at all in this core book. I mean, the vampires in Rifts, they're closer, but that's, number one, not exactly this continuity. And number two, they're pretty non-traditional too. I don't know if they count. There's really no guidance on this. And I guess guidance would be useful, but honestly, this game just isn't about this. The vast majority of player characters are not going to be interested in going on vampire hunts, especially weird vampire hunts where you have to like lure vampires into spooky places to kill them. And true vampires just are kind of outside the scope of Heroes Unlimited. So this power is dumb in a way that's really symptomatic of the fact that like this game kind of half-ass wants to do superhero horror, but we're not really prepared to give any space to it. It's just not what this game is about. I would be remiss not to point out my personal favorite dumb thing about this power, maybe not the dumbest thing because it is contested rules material, but this power does give you a plus 50 SDC at night. Now, I'm not totally clear on how temporary SDC works in Heroes Unlimited, but I think a valid ruling would be that if that SDC goes away, then whatever damage you've taken applies to your original SDC and hit point. I think that would be a reasonable way to run it. That being said, one thing I love is that this could lead to an ironic situation where you're a vampire hunter, you're fighting a vampire, you deliberately sought them out at night so that you could fight them in a spooky nighttime environment where you get bonuses, but then you lose track of time, the sun rises, a shaft of sunlight comes through that window and hits you, it's now daytime, you lose your 50 SDC, and you fucking die at sunrise before you can kill the vampire. The irony potential here is very high, and on just a basic temperamental level, I will always take the side of the vampire over the side of the vampire hunter, so I approve of this dumb little detail. I didn't go much today into the fact that this power kind of skews the campaign toward vampire hunting, whether or not that's what everyone else wants to do, and the reason I didn't talk much about it is because next time we're going to be addressing a power that has the same flaw on a much grander scale, as we conclude the minor super ability section on MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. Today we're discussing page 237 of Heroes Unlimited. We're in the minor super ability section, but it's just about over. We're on the last page of it, and we've saved one of the strongest minor super abilities for last. This is underwater abilities. This is your classic Aquaman power set, basically, or Namor, you know, any of those heroes who belong underwater. They live underwater. They get a few powers when they come to the surface, but they're real badasses when they're back beneath the waves, fighting all that ocean crime. Well, you know, let's just cut right to the chase with the fundamental problem here. These are Aquaman powers, and Aquaman is fine. Aquaman used to be a stupid character, and then he got a lot better. It's cliche to dump on Aquaman for being the worst super friend. It's equally cliche at this point to harp on about how much he has become an overcompensating badass in the meantime, growing out the beard, getting the hook, being a king, being a leader of fishmen. At this point, the character has been thoroughly rehabilitated. Okay, settled. We don't need to talk about that. There's a reason that Aquaman has been on this arc, though, why it's taken kind of his whole comic book career to get him into a more usable position. And the reason is that there's a fundamental conflict with underwater characters, especially in a team context. All their important shit happens underwater. It's where their powers are most powerful. It's where their NPC cast will tend to be. And that's just a different sphere from, like, the relatable human world that we're familiar with and that other heroes operate in. Superheroes work best in cities because you got all this crime, you got all these exciting places to go, locations is very different, there's all this variety. You got other superheroes to cross over with, supervillains, you got things to steal. I mean, this is an important part of the superhero genre. There are no banks underwater. What are criminals doing down there? To solve this problem, naturally, especially if it's the Silver Age and comic books are still for dumb babies, you got to have the land of Atlantis where there's underwater banks and they keep sea dollars in there. And then here come the sea criminals to break in, and here comes Aquaman to fight him and chase him down the sea streets, call the sea police on him. And now we're right back to generic superhero, except it's harder to do crossovers with him, especially if he can't breathe effectively on land, which fortunately this power averts. If you take underwater abilities, you can breathe equally well indefinitely on land or underwater, which, thank God, that was the thing that always screwed up Aquaman, like in the Justice League in the old days. Just a terrible idea, this thing that he can only be out of the water for like an hour. I preferred my personal retcon where Aquaman made that shit up when he first met the Justice League just to avoid them. You know, they all got together to fight Starro or whatever. And, you know, here's Arthur Curry, the fucking king of Atlantis. And he's looking around. And it's like, okay, Superman is a doofus. Batman is an asshole. And then Flash has the brilliant idea that, hey, let's all team up. And Aquaman is like, you know what? That sounds great. I got the communicator. Thank you. Superman, wonderful to meet you. Batman, it's been great. Hey, Guy Gardner, super cool that you were chosen to represent Earth to the cosmos. But here's the thing. I can only breathe on land for an hour. It's been about 45 minutes. You know, like parking at the beach this time of year. Are you kidding me? I have to go. I'm afraid I can't stay for like the meeting, but I will see you all the next time the fate of Earth depends on it, and not before. Goodbye. Splash. It's the perfect lie. Honestly, if people thought I had to return to the ocean every hour, my life would be a lot easier. But the underwater abilities character doesn't have any of that baggage. They can go above water, below water, whatever. But their greatest powers do rely on being under the sea. They get a bunch of swimming proficiency, although not as much as you'd think. After a few levels, a trained swimmer is actually better than the underwater abilities character in terms of their like percentile to swim. Extraordinary strength. You get a bonus to strength when you're underwater. Your SDC increases so much. A character with underwater abilities gets 40 extra SDC on land and 100 extra SDC underwater. 100 SDC. That is so much SDC. Bonuses to strike, bonuses to parry, bonuses to dodge. And so fast. Listen, your speed is quintupled underwater. And not quintupled from swimming speed, quintupled from land speed. You can swim 5 times as fast as you can run. That is very fast. And that multiplier can get you in trouble, as we'll see later. But, of course, the problem is, while this makes you pretty badass, pretty strong and tough and fast, it only works when you're underwater. So, if you want to use your big power, you gotta, like, strong-arm the rest of the group into going on undersea adventures with you. Which is maybe not the coolest thing to do in a group role-playing environment, especially when everybody's got random powers. So a lot of these characters, their superpowers may not work underwater. So it's a potentially powerful ability, but it is somewhat problematic to use in play. Unless you take advantage of one of my favorite loopholes in all of Heroes Unlimited, and it is laid out in black and white on this page. You would think, if you're playing an alien who's like a fish alien from a fish planet, and then you roll underwater abilities, you would think, hey, lucky me, finally, against all odds, the dice have come up in my favor, and I'm a fish person with fishy powers. It's almost like my character makes sense. How can this be in a Palladium role-playing game? Well, it can't be, as it turns out, because, quote, aquatic aliens with this power reverse it, meaning they are an underwater creature with whatever natural underwater abilities they normally possess, who can now function on dry land, e.g., underwater abilities become surface/land abilities. Yes, that's right. If you are a fish person and you roll underwater abilities, you fucking reverse the polarity on underwater abilities, and they become surface abilities, and you become Landman, strange alien from a fish planet, exiled from his fish planet for his strange propensity for running on the grass and the dirt. And you have all your normal fish powers, but in addition to that, you get bonuses whenever you're on dry land. Bonuses whenever you're on dry land. Don't worry, GMs, the power balance will be maintained. This character's speed is only quintupled in the rare event that your adventure takes place on the surface of the Earth. Now get this, if you are a humanoid aquatic alien, a fish person, your underwater speed is 3d4 times 10 already. That's an average of 75 speed. Remember, the human average is 10. You're already swimming over 7 times as fast as a regular person can run. But suppose you're not just a regular fish person. You are Landman with mysterious land powers. You take that swim speed and you quintuple it on the surface. If you also take the running skill, this is nuts. Because remember, the running skill improves your speed attribute, which improves your swimming speed, which in turn improves your running speed in exponential fashion. You could easily end up with a surface speed well over 400 this way. That's hundreds of miles an hour, faster than the extraordinary speed like speedster character, all because of your fish powers. The problem here is the multiplier, and the multipliers stack. Like, remember, if you're a mystical bestowed character, let's say you were, you know, a regular fish person on your fish planet, maybe someone with a tragic physical flaw. You had fin rot. And so you were chosen by your planet's version of Cthulhu, you know, like a mysterious creature who lives in a mysterious surface city where no one can go, chose you to gain the ungodly powers of walking on land and breathing air. That would quintuple your speed again, because mystical bestowed characters get times 5 speed. You could get your speed up to, what, 2,000? We're talking about a supersonic fishman here, and a fishman who is going to have a very hard time explaining his deal to human criminals. There's going to be a lot of supervillains browsing your Wikipedia page, trying to figure out, like, okay, so he's a fish guy, but he runs really fast. He's weak in the water? No. It says here, under weaknesses on his Wikipedia page, no, he's actually strong underwater. He has underwater powers, but he's even stronger on land because he's an exile from the fish planet because he originally was a fish guy, but then he got superpowers and now he's got like the proportional running ability of, you know, a prairie dog or whatever. Underwater abilities is dumb in a different way where like it kind of forces the group underwater with you to have underwater adventures. But the dumbest thing has got to be this special provision that if you happen to be a fish person, and the odds are very slim, you have to randomly roll fish person, right? From the alien power category. Once again, aliens get to have all the fun here. But if you're an alien, and if you're from a fish planet, and if you roll the underwater abilities power, then you kind of hit the jackpot and you get Aquaman powers, except they apply whenever you're on land instead of when you're underwater. So you're just an awesome badass all the time. 100 SDC, running around at Mach 3, huge cloud of dust behind you, just a trail of weird footprints and confused criminals. Why are you so fast? Because I'm a fish man. No time to explain. It's truly a bizarre corner case. One of my favorite little like byways of the rules in Heroes Unlimited. This one narrow path to becoming a super fish man. Today we're discussing page 238 of Heroes Unlimited. We're now beginning the major super abilities section. This section, in theory, is full of big, important superpowers, often containing suites of different sub-abilities that will give your superhero the ability to do lots of thrilling exploits in all different situations. It's their defining thing. It's the thing that makes them who they are, a major superpower. Now, some of these powers make for better podcasting than others because some of them are big and bombastic and deeply flawed and horrible, and that's great for me as a podcaster because I can just talk about, you know, these things that are obviously dumb, as so often happens in Heroes Unlimited, but other times it's a little more subtle. So allow me to convey to you what is wrong with adapt to environment by means of an extended hypothetical situation, a parable, if you will, of a superhero team that we shall call Adapto-Man and his amazing dead friends. Adapto-Man, born with the strange power to adapt to his environment wherever he goes. His body changes in strange and amazing ways to make sure that he can survive and even thrive in even the harshest environments. This power, adapt to environment, enables him to engage in many amazing exploits, along with his super friends. His poor, poor super friends. This power, adapt to environment, was written by Aaron Oliver and Kevin Sambita. Like some of the other powers in this section, it has a separate byline because it's originally by somebody else and then kind of like worked over with that Sambita magic. These bylines are a little bit interesting because you can begin to put together similarities between powers with similar contributing authors. We may have quite a bit to say about Aaron Oliver as we continue through this section, but for now, just note that there is some additional creative input on this power. And here's how it works. Here's what Adapto-Man is capable of. Number one, adapt to air/atmosphere. Quote, this power enables the character to breathe in any atmosphere, including those that would be toxic and deadly to normal humans. So, you're Adapto-Man. You're hanging out with your amazing friends when suddenly you are abducted by aliens and teleported to a distant planet with an all-methane atmosphere. Never fear. You are Adapto-Man. You'll be just fine. Well, I say just fine. What will actually happen is, quote, for the initial 1d6 minutes, he coughs and chokes. Reduce all combat bonuses, melee actions, and skill performance by 50%, and finally passes out. So you cough and choke for a handful of minutes, and then you fall unconscious in this new methane atmosphere. However, after that, you'll be fine after the coma. Quote, he will remain in a coma-like sleep for 1d4 hours while his metabolism reacts and adapts to the alien and otherwise deadly atmosphere. When he awakens, he will be able to breathe the new atmosphere without difficulty. So when you're transported by your deadly foes to the distant planet with the all-methane atmosphere, you will lose most of your combat bonuses. You will choke. You will suffocate and pass out after a few minutes. Then you're going to be in a lifeless coma for like up to 4 hours, 1 to 4 hours, during which time, hopefully, your foes will have the respect for the legend of Adapto-Man not to like shoot you or stab you. Then after, you know, on average, about 2.5 hours of combined time of coughing and suffocating and coma, finally, you will sit up, gasp, and be fine. Well, I say fine. Your friends will all be dead. Adapto-Man and his amazing dead friends, it's clear who's the star of the show, because whenever you get transported to an all-methane atmosphere, Adapto-Man comes out smelling like a rose after several hours of being in a coma state. But his amazing dead friends are not so lucky. They are all dead. This is the fundamental problem with Adapto-Man. This power is just not really a team-friendly power. And it combines that fatal flaw with another terrible flaw, which is that it's one of those powers that is just asking for it from the GM. Being transported into like the middle of an alien city with toxic, unbreathable air and no breathing apparatus is a thing a GM would never do to you unless you had this power. Because you would just die. There would be nothing you could do. It wouldn't be fun, right? Like, unless the GM is deliberately trying to kill off the entire group and end the campaign, which, you know, would be understandable since this is Heroes Unlimited, but still kind of a shithead move, the GM is only going to pull this out because they know that you're going to pass out and be in a coma and then be fine, except for your dead friends. But you have additional powers too. If the GM doesn't want to pull out all the stops, there are other things that might befall Adapto-Man that allow him to show off his amazing tragic powers. Subpower number two, semi-impervious to toxic gases. With a term like semi-impervious right at the front, you know it's going to be good. Quote, the character is effectively impervious to poisonous gases, smoke, and deadly pollution in the air. Not that they don't have some negative effect on him. So, effectively impervious. I mean, they still hurt, and they still fuck you up. But you'll live to hurt again another day. Don't worry, Adaptoman. Quote, exposure to the toxic gas slash smoke slash polluted air causes the character to cough and have difficulty breathing for the entire period he is exposed to the foul air. During that period, reduce all combat bonuses, melee actions, and skill performance by 50%, but he can continue to function on an impaired level without physical injury or any other effects, i.e., sleeping gas will not put the character to sleep, poison does no damage, etc. So here's the thing. Reducing all combat bonuses, reducing attacks per melee, and reducing all skill performance by half pretty well fucks your character over. It's the bleeder all over again. You're still up and fighting, but you're at, you know, generously 50% effectiveness. You're coughing and hacking, you can barely breathe, and this happens to you right away. It's not so much that you're impervious to poison gas, it's more like you're allergic to poison gas. Because keep in mind, let's say you were hit by, like, sleeping gas. You and your amazing friends were out on the trail of some crime, you get jumped by the perpetrators, hit with sleeping gas. The rest of them have, like, a certain length of time, right? Like, maybe a couple of minutes before they are knocked out. So they get to fight back for a few minutes, and then they're going to get dizzy and they're going to fall over, the way that sleeping gas normally works in comic books and cartoons and things. Not you. As soon as that sleeping gas hits, everybody else is still fighting, but you immediately start wheezing and coughing and crying. Like when you're on a road trip and you pass into, like, the pollen death zone, and maybe you don't even notice the road sign, but when somebody in the car starts weeping and they get all puffy, you can tell that you've, you know, sentenced them to many miles of misery. That's immediately what happens as soon as anybody tries to gas Adaptoman and his amazing friends. Now, he won't fall asleep in a few minutes. He'll remain up, albeit at minimum effectiveness. So there may be some utility here. I mean, it's apples and oranges. Is it better to be able to fight for a couple of minutes at full effectiveness before you pass out? Or is it better if you never pass out, but you immediately start taking crushing penalties? I don't know. What I can tell you is that if this isn't sleeping gas, you're probably worse off being semi-impervious, frankly, than you would be just taking the hit. Many kinds of, like, gas and poisons and stuff, like, let's say, the stage magician's stink bomb, its effects are not as bad as this. So if the whole group gets attacked by an evil magician, you know, you are set upon by the fantastic Stinko, he throws a fistful of stink bombs and then starts whacking you on the head with goblin dust bags. That shit sucks for your amazing friends, but it sucks for you because you're allergic to poison gas. So you're going to start taking these penalties. You're immune to stink, but instead of the effects of stink, you take the effects of being quote-unquote semi-impervious, which are worse. I gotta say, though, in this power's defense, where it really pays off is when you're hit by straight-up lethal poison gas. Like, I'm talking colorless, odorless, breathe this for 1 minute, drop dead gas. In that scenario, the rest of his amazing friends will die, for sure, but Adaptoman, he lives on. That's his heroic motto. Adaptoman, sigh, lives on. If only I were semi-impervious to regret, the most poison gas of all. The third subpower is the only one that's pretty cool, and it allows you to adapt to physical environments in a more tangible way. For example, you can adapt to an arboreal environment. This allows you to make your feet prehensile, which is great. And you get a bonus to climb and acrobatics, and you can jump really far. These are like monkey powers. So that's cool. Do you need to be in an arboreal environment to use these powers? It's not totally clear. But certainly they're consciously activated because you can only maintain them for a certain length of time, and you can only do one at a time. So it's not like whenever you want to jump, you can just activate monkey powers and go for it. You can only maintain monkey powers for an hour at first level, one additional hour per level, and you got to choose between monkey powers and one of your other adaptive power sets. Like, there's one for cold environments where you can operate in freezing cold temperatures with no drawback. Similarly, there's one for extreme heat where you're fine with, like, low water consumption, you don't get heat stroke, etc., etc. There's even one, and this one does not bode well for your amazing friends, for disease slash plague conditions. Quote, the super being can increase his natural resistance to and recovery from disease, bacteria, viruses, etc. The character is 5 times more resistant to disease than the average human, +5 to save versus disease, and should he catch it, the disease is never fatal, and the effects, penalties, damage, and duration are half normal. Yes, you heard that right. Should he catch it? Back to this semi-impervious bullshit. If there's a fatal plague sweeping the world, it's not that you're immune to it. You can totally catch it, and you can even suffer its effects. which means you can carry it and transmit it to your amazing friends. But when you all collapse in a horrible heap of vomit under the weight of the pain, under the weight of like the blisters and the dehydration, you'll all fall in a pile together, but only Adapto-Man will rise again, because however much disease fucks him up, however much he spreads it to his amazing friends, he'll always live. He may suffer, but he will live. Never fear, Adapto-Man. One day you will rise again, return to the Adapto Cave, and construct yet another batch of statues to your fallen comrades, your amazing dead friends. You will always live on to carry their memories, although you may run out of cave space. But barring that, their legacies are secure. And then there's a bunch of others. You can adapt to being underwater, so you can breathe underwater. You can even adapt to being in a vacuum, although you're not very good at this. You put yourself into a stasis state where you're immobile and the air in your lungs is preserved, which do not take Heroes Unlimited's vacuum survival tips, kids. You can only do this for 5 minutes per level, and you can't do anything, even think, while you're in stasis. So this power is only useful if, for example, you get sucked out of an airlock and you know you're about to get sucked out of an airlock. So you're like, okay, let me go into stasis and let me just drift here in one of the comas I love so dearly. And, you know, assuming I'm sixth level, I'll float here for like a half hour, unable to think or move in the vacuum of space, and then die. And hopefully, sometime in that time period, my amazing friends will discover that I'm floating in the fucking vacuum and, you know, get out the space lasso and bring me back into the ship. Although if I were your amazing friends, honestly, I'd be considering whether I want this guy around. A real fucking Jonah is what you are, because you may notice that all these things that the GM is gonna have to inflict on you to make your power work, like sub-zero temperatures, extreme heat with lack of water, an unbreathable alien atmosphere, poison gas that kills you, lethal radiation, being underwater with no breathing apparatus, all these things will kill your whole fucking team. And your powers don't extend to or like help your friends in any way. Here's the thing. We're gonna see it's a trend with the powers co-penned by Aaron Oliver that they're really cool ideas. They would actually be very fun for comic book characters, but they're not always fully thought out in terms of how they'll work in play. And the problem with Adapto-Man is that he's blown one of his major power slots on a power that is almost never going to be useful outside of a scenario that will kill the rest of the group. And that's the dumbest thing on this page. And for God's sake, let this dude be impervious to things, rather than semi-impervious. Like, hours of coma because you're in an unbreathable alien atmosphere? Fuck right off. How many times in your gaming career are you going to be transported to the atmosphere of a planet? It's unbreathable, toxic. This is like a once-in-a-lifetime, a once-in-a-campaign event. It's the one thing your character is good at. And you got to sit there in a coma surrounded by your enemies for hours before you can wake up? Just let this poor dude breathe. Take it easy on Adapto-Man. All his friends are dead. Today we're discussing page 239 of Heroes Unlimited. We are still in the major super abilities section, and we're moving on to another superpower that, like yesterday's power, Adapt to Environment, was co-written by Kevin Sambita and Aaron Oliver. But this power is on the other end of the spectrum. Whereas Adapt to Environment was kind of like a sad sack power for superheroes who want to attend a lot of funerals, this power is crazy and over the top, and I really like it, even though it is dumb, dumb, dumb. This is Alter Limbs. Now, you'll recall from the minor super ability section that Borgen had a power called Body Weapons that allowed her to transform her limbs into medieval weapons. And that's already cool. It's already a 90s superpower. Alter Limbs takes it a step further. You get body weapons, first of all, as a subpower. Turn your hands into swords, spikes on your forehead, and so on. But it doesn't stop there. It gets even more 90s, because subpower 2 is mechanized body weapons. Quote, the character can alter his limbs into a variety of modern weapons and useful machines, from a pencil sharpener or wrench to a pistol or rifle. So if a sword's not doing the job for you, you can turn your arm into a rifle, or even a grenade launcher is offered here, in addition to all kinds of various powered tools. However, the power to achieve your fondest dream and physically become a firearm comes with a cost. Every 2 grenades or 12 bullets that you fire cost you 1 hit point. This is some grim and gritty shit. Let me just clarify. Hit points in Palladium are not like hit points in Dungeons and Dragons, where they're like highly abstract. Hit points, in contrast to SDC, represent damage you can't just shrug off, right? Like if you're a big tough boxer and you get punched, you can mostly laugh it off because you've got that physical toughness. You might get a little bit bruised or whatever, but you just absorb the blow. You take hit point damage from like poison, from having your soul consumed, from being shot point blank in the head. This is life-threatening like damage to your vital systems. physically. That is what you are sacrificing to shoot bullets out of your arm with mechanized body weapons. And this is so fucking metal, I don't know whether to laugh or just like throw devil horns at this book. Because what that means is you're physically transmuting parts of your body into bullets to shoot at your enemy. Like, what does it even look like if you go to the doctor after this? Because you're going to need to, right? If you get into a big firefight and you're, you know, taking cover behind something and you've upturned a table and you've turned your arm into an automatic rifle and you're spraying the room, you're shooting like bits of yourself at people. So you're going to have to go for medical treatment because you've sacrificed your hit points to shoot these bullets. Like, what do they see on the x-ray? Are you missing like chunks out of your internal organs? Are you missing teeth? Do you have like pock marks all on your back? And the doctor's like, geez, what happened here? And you're like, listen, doc, I had no choice. You know about my medical condition, my gun arm itis. Well, I was in a firefight surrounded by ninjas because it's the 90s. I had to take them out. So I had to turn my back meat into bullets. Or 12 bullets or 2 grenades, I can't remember. It all happened pretty fast, and also I probably turned some of my brain into bullets. What's both great and horrifying about this power is that automatic weapons and like the burst rules are all very damaging, very powerful. Most of these superpowers, I'll be honest with you, spoilers for the super ability section, most of these are not on the level of a good machine gun in terms of damage output. If you really want to take down some criminals the hard way, what you want is a machine gun, not, you know, laser blasts and stuff, because that's the kind of game Heroes Unlimited is. But this is the best of both worlds, because it's a superpower that allows you to turn into a machine gun and kill people. But to take full advantage of the lethality of machine guns, you gotta fire a lot of bullets. And a lot of bullets means a lot of body meat propelled through your armhole at your foes. I mean, you don't even have to reload, because you're not only the gun, you're also the clip. It's a little passage from the Tao of arm guns there, but it's true. Your whole body is your ammo. So if you want to shoot a 192-round, quote-unquote, full-clip burst out of the 50-caliber machine gun that is your right arm, you can do massive damage, way more than other superpowers. But 192 bullets, that's like 16 hit points. That's more than many starting characters have. And even with your bonuses to physical endurance and hit points that you get with this power, you probably can only keep that up for like a couple of rounds. But that damage over time, though, with no time spent reloading, your damage output is damn near the top of this game's scale. But you're also like playing with fire. You are very likely to burn yourself out and suffer like the most tragic and 90s of superheroes' deaths, where you're up against a hard opponent, you're Doomsday, rampaging through the city, and you just train your arm on them, and you're like, let's fucking do this. And you just literally shoot your entire body through your arm. Turn yourself completely, like a fucking gun nut apotheosis. You just shoot your whole body out as bullets, and your gun arm just falls to the ground, and you're doing thousands of points of damage. You die as you lived, in a hail of senseless violence. And there's nothing to stop this from literally happening, by the way. I'm not exaggerating. If you use this power to turn your arm into some kind of like electrical tool, that also runs on hit points, like, you know, a chainsaw or whatever too. That runs on hit points, but it automatically cuts you off when you get down to 15 hit points. Like, you know, the little red light on your chainsaw arm goes off like, whoops, better not chainsaw anymore, you're about to die. Not so with bullets. You can turn every last ounce of your body into ammunition and shoot it right through your arm if you want to. And why not? If there's three things the author of this game loves, it's beefy bodies, superpowers, and automatic weapons. How could he forbid this beautiful union among all three? This is a culmination of the Heroes Unlimited design ethos. But it is not the final word on this power. Join me next time as we discuss the other bananas features of this wonderful dumb power on MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. This has been Mega Dumbcast. New episodes drop every day except for Sundays, when all the previous week's episodes drop in one big chunk for your binging convenience. Contact or check out the show wherever you want. It is Mega Dumbcast on Twitter, Instagram, Podbean, your favorite podcatcher, etc., etc. And if you like my tiny little podcast, consider giving me a tiny bit of money at ko-fi.com/megadumb. That is ko-fi.com/megadumb. MDC, Palladium Books, Heroes Unlimited, and all associated trademarks are property of Kevin Sambita. This season's theme song is To the Top by Midair Machine, whose work you can find at freemusicarchive.org/music/askagain. That's ask again, two words with a space in between. Dumbheads, I will catch you next time.